Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
It's football season. It's training camp season. I'm back. This is a brand new era on the podcast. This is episode number 171. New logos. It's a new era. It's time for YWC Football Talk. So let's get started. I am back here with my main man, McGarvin, at Patriots POV. It's camp season. How are we feeling?
Glad to be here. Glad it's camp season. I'm so over all of the, you know, the empty speculation, because that's really what you get from mid-camp to the start of training camp, where everyone has a take on the players, the teams, and who's going to be good, who's not, la, la, la. And it's like, well, there's been no football, you know, even practiced in, you know, two months, yet everyone has a new take from last time. And I'm like, well, how do you have a new take with no new information? So it's finally like, all right, cool. We're back. We're in training camp, and we no longer have to just, like, go based on absolutely nothing, because that's really what it's been over the last month and a half.
That's what it's been. But look, I always say this on the podcast, that when news breaks after you finish recording, it sucks. But today's a rare day.
Yeah.
Today's a good day because someone got paid Chow. I had to do the pun because Patriots defensive tackle has signed a two-year $20.8 million extension, including $17.85 million fully guaranteed. But you made the interesting point, because it was actually your tweet that I pulled it from, that for Doug Kiad, that 10.5 of it is salary bonus, which the original cap it was supposed to be 10.25 million. So how are we feeling about this? I've seen some like overpaid reactions, but I feel like, but actually I just want to say one quick thing. I feel like a lot of people have to pump the brakes before they learn how the money is truly divvied up. Yeah. I feel like they see, you know, 17 million and then right away they're like, okay, that's a bit of a stretch. But when you see how much of it's signing and performance bonus, you can kind of like ease off the brakes. It's like last year, remember the Cam Newton's thing, and then you discovered it was like $4 million.
It looked ridiculous. With incentives and all that kind of pump the numbers. I think right off rip, I don't have a huge takeaway on this. I thought Godchild was fine last year. There's some people who, for whatever reason, seem to think he was bad. I don't think he was bad. I think he was just average. He was an average player on an average D line, and that's
solid contributor.
Right. I think though, when people are like, "Oh, he, you know, this was an overpay." What I honestly think is that last year when they signed him in the first place, that was the overpay, right? Because he, you know, he signed was it 2 for $15 or something to that effect, but his cap hit for the second year was $10 million. So that's simply not gonna do, especially for the player that he was in Miami, and then he came over and you're like, all right, that was a little rich. So I think the overpay was actually on the front end, not this end. I think this move was more just create cap space and give him another year. I know it's a two-year extension. My gut tells me it's actually going to be a one-year extension, and then we'll see. I think the signing bonus is 10.5. The total guarantees full signing per the chapters and Ian Rappaport's, the total guarantee is like 17.8 or something to that effect. So when you look at something like that, what I really think is, well, if 10 is signing bonus, that means over the next 3 years, he has $7.85 million guaranteed in terms of salary. That's not a ton of money, right? You could have a situation where, for all we know, next year is fully guaranteed and there is no guaranteed money into year three. At which point, how are we talking overpay when it's essentially a one-year extension? You know what I mean? I think it's one of those things where not enough people, like you mentioned, not enough people understand how cap numbers work and how the cap works within relation to contracts. They see this huge number and they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe what we're, you know, $20 million. I can't believe it. And really you're going to look, it's going to be closer to something like, you know, like $15 million, you know? So I think it's always fun when news drops about a new contract and so everyone sees the big numbers and we ooh and we ah, but then like 3 days later, you know, Bill Gates tweet out the entire contract and it won't be anything crazy, but that doesn't get the reaction. So that's not the numbers that go up. I think what's really interesting is, though, is when you read between the lines on or really read the tweets that get sent out by the insiders when they break the 100%. News. Right? You read Ian Rappaport or you read Adam Schefter, and it is very clearly a tweet generated by the agent, right? They're like, yeah, you know, they included, you know, he got the
Rosenhaus.
Drew Rosenhaus. They tagged him down at the bottom. That's who negotiated it. It specifically included 17.85, fully guaranteed at signing, just to kind of like pump it up. Like, look at this great deal that we got. And it's very clearly, and these guys have the same, essentially the same tweet. And it's like, well, this is very clearly coming from the agent. And I know Shefty's been really bad about that in, recent years, where he'll get a text from an agent, he'll just tweet that out directly. And it's like, yeah, he didn't even edit that. But it was one of those things where it's like, all right, clearly, the agents want it to be known, like, here's what we got, because it's good for business. But, I mean, I think fans just take the bait every time, and I don't really understand. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's, like, yeah, it's fine. Wait for the numbers.
Exactly, and that's why this time the numbers came out, and it's from former Patriots reporter, now Pro Football Focus national reporter, Doug Kyatt, who basically said, and you pointed out as well on Twitter, that's how I found out about it, that 10.5 of it is signing bonus. So that's why I was saying earlier, the whole, pump the brakes on numbers. I feel like fans, they always go for that overreaction. Like, people see, wait, why? Like, why did they give him 17 guaranteed? They learn, look, X amount is a signing bonus, X amount is you have to get this X amount of sacks or yards or touchdowns. I'm just saying all numbers, because that's where all performance bonus comes from, I believe. And also, too, like I said earlier, with the Cam Newton one, sort of it was based on playoff performance. But obviously, look, that never came to be. Max the starter, Max QB1. We'll get into him later. But with these contracts, it's always one of those things where people see the number and they freak out. Meanwhile, they have to wait. Yeah. But then the only time with numbers, we'll actually get into it, that's one thing I was saying to you off air, that news is, because I want to talk about this one, is the Kyler Murray deal and everything, that all all that craziness. But that's the moral of the story, that with NFL contracts, don't freak out, wait for the numbers. And for Patriots fans freaking out, just remember this, they have a lot of cap next year too. Patriots have, I don't know if it's the same amount as 2021, but I know next year they're like one of the tops of the league for cap.
Yeah, I think they're all right money-wise. Not something I think – one, I don't think people should worry anyway, just because the Patriots have always been really good about managing their cap. I don't think all of a sudden Bill doesn't know how to manage a cap. Oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? We have no money. It's fine.
Yeah, like this year too, during free agency, when everyone was like freaking out when all these Patriots were leaving, and like people were messaging me about the J.C. Jackson stuff, and I was just like, look, obviously like they let him and Tooney walk, but at the same time too, they know – you got to learn when to pick and choose your battles. And sometimes you're going to lose your battles, but sometimes you're going to win your battles. That's just the unfortunate reality of managing the cap, even in a league that where the cap is as high as the NFL. When you look at leagues like, well, baseball doesn't have one. NBA's is weird with the luxury tax and stuff like that. Then NHL has a strict hard cap. But might as well get into it with Kyler Murray stuff. 240, I believe it's 46 a year, which is more than Josh Allen, which I know a lot of people are saying this, and I actually saw this went down. This got me down the Bills Twitter rabbit hole of a lot of them thanking Bean for the deal that Josh Allen took last year to what Kyler Murray took this year. But I look at it from both ends of the spectrum with his contract. Look, is it an overpay? Yes. But is he worth the money? No. But at the same time, too, if the Cardinals didn't pay him, you're going to let him walk, and then you're back at square one. So it's that weird, like, you can see the pros, but the cons outshine them, and then that whole 4 hours of study.
That was an error. They should not have been.
You don't let those things escape the building.
No. I think that's what you tell them as we're signing the contract. Don't put it in the contract, because you know the contract's going to get out. There are people, reporters who do get those contracts. They do see the contracts. It's going to get out there. I'm not sure why you would do that. Kind of like embarrass them, but it kind of is what it is. Kyler Murray is an interesting player, because I personally don't really like him very much. I don't think he's a very good player. Or he's not a top player. I think he's obviously a good quarterback. I'm not stupid, but
he's fun to watch.
But I don't think he's like a transcendent player. So it's like, all right, cool. Kyler Murray, they have to pay him, right? And I know it's 46, I think it's 46.3 or 46.13 or something to that effect. And everyone's like, I can't believe they're paying him that much. And I'm like, that's kind of the market, the market rate. Whenever these quarterbacks get these, whenever quarterbacks get these extensions, right, everyone's always like, oh, he's not worth that, or he's not that kind of player. And I'm always just kind of like, it doesn't really matter if he's that player or not. It is his turn to get paid, so he's going to get paid, right? When I remember with the Prescott, prior to his extension, everyone's like, well, he's not a 40 million. I'm like, well, yes, he is, because he's going to get paid this year, and the going rate for quarterbacks is, 40 million. Now, you can opt not to pay him, like you mentioned with Kyler Murray. You're like, oh, well, they shouldn't have paid Kyler Murray. And it's like, cool. And go to who? Chris Streveler at backup quarterback. I don't even know who the backup quarterback over in Arizona is, but it's like, who are you turning to? right? You just like, oh, just draft a guy. Well, if it was that easy, then every team in the league would have a quarterback, and they don't. So it's kind of time, you know, these guys are going to get paid, and they get paid market rate, because that's you know, you're worth whatever the market's going to pay you. So
exactly. That's the biggest thing with it. It's you're worth what the market says. And even to your point, it's like, okay, if Arizona were to get rid of them, like, it's really Steve Kahn and Michael Bidwell were pushed into a corner. There's one of those things where it's just like, look, you have to sign him. You don't have any other choices. It has to get done. Like the same thing you say with him too. What's your next option? It's like saying to old people, oh, Minnesota should get rid of Kirk Cousins. Are you going to start Sean Mannion all year?
Right. No, exactly. That's perfectly said. That is absolutely perfectly said. Same thing with Baltimore, where they're like, oh, you know, they should get Lamar. He's not a good quarterback. Blah, blah, blah. He's not a one, blah, blah, blah. All that is great until Tyler Huntley's playing games for you. All of a sudden you're like, well, maybe we should have kept that Lamar guy, right? So it's like, if you have no other option, you kind of have to pay or suck it up. No team is going to hamstring their franchise like that, where they're like, well, we're just going to throw him away with no succession plan. It doesn't work. So, like, you have a guy, even if he's a middling guy, you kind of either figure that out before it's time to pay him, or if you wait to the point where we're at with Kyler Murray, then, sorry, you kind of have no choice. So
exactly. And my other thing with Lamar Jackson, too, is his whole no agent thing, I think, is what's the biggest kill for him not getting a contract so far. Because, look, we know Eric Burkhart, Kyler's agent, was very vocal online. He also represents Cliff Kingsbury. But with Lamar, he doesn't have that guy, you know, in executives' ears being like, hey, my guy, this is why you should sign my guy. This is why my guy earns $200+ million. This is why my guy, look, face of the league. This is why he should get paid. He doesn't have that representation, which I think is still holding him back. But for everyone being like, oh, why isn't he signed? It's going to be a team thing. Lamar's going to sign. We all know that. Lamar, he's going to be a Baltimore Raven for life. He's going to – hell, that. I have really high hopes for that team this year, which it sucks because it's the Patriots' home opener opponent. But at the same time, too, look, we know a healthy Baltimore team is going to the playoffs this year. Last year they weren't healthy and they just missed by that much.
Yep.
But yeah, no, look, with the Kyler stuff, like we said, look, the study film thing, it was unfortunate that got out. But at the same time, too, you got to roll with the punches of it. You just got to own up to it. But it's like we said, what's your next option? And when you don't have it, fine.
Yep.
Like even – I'm going to put a Patriots twist on this for everyone that was laughing when we drafted Bailey Zappe this year. And everyone was just like, oh my God. Like people started the whole, like, you know, is there a quarterback thing there? But in reality, we learned, look, we knew Jared Stidham wasn't going to work out here. So that's why it's like, hey, bring in Bailey Zappe, who's not there. I even remember getting chirped at for the whole Brian Hoyer stuff. But then at least now, I'm not saying it's the same boat. It's with Mac. We'll cross that boat later. But with bringing in Hoyer and having Zappe there, it's almost like it's like insurance policies. But at the same time, too, the insurance policies in Arizona and Minnesota, when you have teams that are trying to get to that next level that have been those like mediocre teams for a while, you got to have someone that's leading that room that you can management in order to trust.
For sure, yeah, I think teams need to be more proactive. If you know if they're concerned and their guy isn't the guy, cool, then draft a guy. Right. That's one of the reasons I don't hate, you know, what the Packers did with taking, you know, Jordan Love, where sure Aaron Rodgers was still playing at a very high level, but at that point and to this point we've seen that he kind of flirts with retirement, kind of like Big Ben did for, you know, a little while there, kind of flirts with retirement. He kind of acts too cool for school, like he's really not interested, you know, whether or not he'll play football or not. So it's like, all right, cool. If we don't draft someone, we're going to end up with, you know, who was the backup at the time? The kid from UCLA. Was it Brett Hundley? So Brett Hundley up there, and it's like, yeah, we're going to have to do a little better than this. You know what I mean? So I understand going and taking a quarterback, especially, and I think we have a unique perspective on this because the Patriots draft a quarterback legitimately every 2 years. So it's not weird, especially if you have a quarterback, which is why I thought the reaction to the Zappe draft was really weird, because people are like, oh, this is going to be a QB controversy. And I'm like, Patriots do this literally all the time. They had, you know, they had Tom, they took Jimmy. They had Tom and Jimmy and then took Jacoby. Like, they do it literally all the time. It just better. No team has ever lost from having too many good quarterbacks, right? And if you have two good quarterbacks, you trade one. Now you just flipped an asset. Nothing wrong with it.
And fun fact, too, the now head coach of the Minnesota Vikings and the current head coach of the Arizona Cardinals were both Patriot quarterback draft picks during the Tom Brady era.
During the Tom Brady, like, actively winning Super Bowls era. So, like, relax. You know what I mean?
Exactly. It's all the fun and hot takes of football season. But now is the best part we get to watch. Now is the part why we're here.
Actual football.
Patriots camp. Actual football. Yeah. Actual conversations. I don't know when you're going to be getting down to Gillette Stadium or the field house to watch the practice, but from day one, what were some takeaways you saw? What were some players that kind of stood out to you? And how do you feel going into training camp?
All right, so I'll start with the last one first. I'm excited about this training camp. I think that their 2020 draft class has the potential to be like amazing. We're talking that Kyle Duggar was in that class, and they had Uche was in that class. You had obviously both tight ends. I still believe was in that class as well. I still believe in Madonnafi, obviously, because I'm a fool. And then the 2021 class, I think, also has a lot of potential. We just didn't see it because, a lot of the players didn't get to play. I think this year I'm super excited to see a lot of those players who I think could be contributors, right? On top of the rookies they have coming in, but it's almost like you have a second rookie class because a lot of those guys didn't play, right? There's some guys like Josh Bledsoe didn't play at all. I'm super excited to see because I'm like, all right, cool. He could be a safety. He can play. He plays in the slot. He can play a little corner as well. Cool. That is a player that we didn't get to see last year that we now get to see. So it's like I'm excited because there are a bunch of new faces. I know a lot of people are like, oh, this team is really young or it's not that talented or whatever. I think that's part of the excitement, though. It's like, well, that's what camp's for, right? We're going to go and we're going to see a bunch of new players that we haven't seen before. And for better or worse, the Patriots are going to put them out there and, sink or swim with those guys. So I'm really excited about that. I think the reports from, the first day of camp were, depending on who you got them from, were what you expected. There's always some reporters who put a twist on it. I don't want to necessarily say a negative twist, but, like, they see things that no one else mentioned, and you're like, why'd you mention that? Like you saw Mike Giardi, posted about Tyquan Thornton, and no one else mentioned it, but they're like, oh, yeah, he got locked up by Malcolm Butler, at the line of scrimmage, and he also got locked up by, I think it was Dan Jones, also, stuffed him at the line or whatever, and it's like, oh, yeah, see, he can't get off press, and that's the whole thing. And I'm like, right, no one else is mentioning that, so, like, on the one hand, that's quote-unquote negative, but it's good to see that because you're like, if, you're there in person, you can see it, and you'll remember it. But if no one else is reporting it, then it'll be a surprise come October if he can't get off press. And we're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. No one even, this wasn't even a possibility. But obviously, Tyquan Thornton was a player I wanted to see. I wanted to see Devontae Parker, do something. And that was obviously exciting. They said he had three touchdowns, good connection with Mac. And he was just kind of bodying dudes up in the red zone. And I know that sounds like nothing, but for a team that simply hasn't had that outside of tight ends in a hell of a long time, it is exciting. All right, cool, a guy who can get up and actually go get it. Because N'Keal Harry was supposed to be that guy, and he just, for whatever reason, wasn't that physical when he wasn't blocking. So it was like, all right, cool. So to see Devontae Parker be able to body up and be that, jump ball guy that the Patriots have, ostensibly wanted for a while now, stuff like that's really interesting. I think, though, with camp on the whole, I'm excited to see always usage, right? Because the reporters can't report on it per the Patriots media policy, but who's lining up where? So I think that matters a little more than the plays, because the plays are for the most part scripted in terms of, all right, we're going to run this play against this defense so we can see how it looks, right? The results aren't scripted, but the play is. So it's like, all right, cool, you put say you put Nelson Aguilar in the slot and you put him up against someone like Joan Williams, obviously you're looking to see a mismatch there, right? Because Nelson Aguilar can fly and Joan Williams can barely run. So it's like, all right, cool. That's scripted, right? So the results there are going to be like, oh my gosh, Nelson Aguilar roasted Joan Williams. And it's like, yeah, because they put him in a position to do that because they wanted to get a good look at it. I think what's more important is the fact that Nelson Aguilar is in the slot. He didn't play in the slot last year. So it's like, oh, he's lining up in the slot. That means something a little more than the fact that he beat Joan Williams in the slot, because I don't think that necessarily matters, especially in these early practices because they're unpadded. Right. So I want to see who's lining up there and who's playing special teams. Those are the two things I always look for in when I'm at camp, because those are the things that matter. Those are always whenever we end the training camp period with a surprise addition to the roster, it's always one of those players that you're like, it's only a surprise if you didn't pay attention. Like, it's like, oh, this guy made the roster. I can't believe it. And it's like, yeah, he also played on four core special teams units and he was second team. Kind of mattered a little bit. Like, all right, cool, they found a role for him. So things like that are things that I'm always looking for whenever I'm down at Gillette.
Yeah, no, those, you're right, because even with the stuff like where it's like, okay, cool, Nelson Aguilar looks good in this coverage, but they want to see if he looks good in the coverage. So that's why they're going to put someone who's a little bit weaker on him. I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
You do those mismatches on purpose so everyone, but some people can take it and look at the, make a positive into a negative. But then that's why, like, I, like, for example, the one video I watched today was Mike Reese, because he pays more attention to the whole, hey, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
Let's put this for a better term. Who doesn't love Mike Reese?
That's your point. That is a great point.
Yeah. Even up here, I there's times where I get to watch Patriots game day on WBZ up here, and I'm all the way up in Canada. So
yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
But with the whole stuff with like training camp, it's just like that. Even I'm just gonna go on with Mike's quickly, because he was mentioning how there was the fanfare from Mac, how Matt Patricia seemed to be the one calling the offensive plays. But then even when Mac gets asked about that, he turns it into, oh, hey, it's more, we're going to use their defensive experience to learn the offense. So you can pickpocket the defense. So yeah. it's little things like that. But even still, the whole, look, we know they can't disclose the stuff for the media policy. Shout out Stacey James. But I had to get the plug in there. Hopefully.
Yeah, always.
give me media passes this year when I'm down there, Stace. But no, you want to see the good with training camp. You're not trying to put players out there to look bad. You want to put your players out there to look good. And even the same thing, too. That's why they put, like, Thornton on Butler, because you want to see Butler shine in camp. You want to make Butler look good, because if Butler looks bad going into the season, it's going to be, oh, why they bring him back, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. It was, like, just a flash in the pan, because obviously, look, that play will go down. That's the thing, though. Malcolm Butler could have a whatever year this year. That play that he made in 2015 is going to go down in Patriots history, no matter what way you script it.
100%. He ends up one of my favorite players, even when he went to Tennessee and did whatever it was he did in Tennessee, and the weirdness of benching Super Bowl 52. It's like, cool. I still love him. he picked up that ball and changed my life. I was like, all right, cool. Stuff like that. It's like, of course, you want the players to look good. You know the players are going to do what it is they do. But I think everyone needs to kind of like slow down on the production part of it. I think it's always really interesting to me when people are taking stats, because it's training camp. Like, the stats legitimately don't matter, even a little bit. And it's especially weird. It's things like, we don't know certain things with like passes. I remember last year with Cam and Mac, we were tracking like, all right, Mac threw this interception or whatever, and Cam threw this interception. I remember the interception against the Eagles when they were down in Philly, and they did the joint practices. During the game. But in the practice, it wasn't as one-sided. But I remember that it was nearing the end of practice, and Cam threw a pretty hideous interception, and that's all everyone was talking about. Oh, it's such a bad interception. And then they asked him about it, and it was like, yeah, it was 2 minutes. It was, it was 3rd and 19. We only had 6 seconds left. I just threw it up to give someone a shot. So, like, on paper, it's like, oh, my gosh, Cam Newton threw an interception. He's losing the battle. And in reality, it's like, well, the situation, which we didn't know about and we couldn't have known about from the stands, dictated, like, hey, we kind of just got to throw this ball up. Sure, it might get intercepted, but that is literally what we're practicing, to see if we can, with the clock, winding down with no timeouts, let's see if we can make a play. Things like that don't get accounted for in those stats. So I think training camp stats are just weird. But at the same time, I read them. I certainly read them. Practice is over, and I'm over it. I'm nesting. All right, what's Zach Coxey? All right, cool. What Andrew Callahan see? Evan Lazar, what did you see? And it's like,
Phil Perry, what did you see?
Exactly. So
exactly. No. I know I kind of like, I don't end it, whatever. But like at the same time, too, yeah, you're right. Where a simple play in August that looks bad can be something that in November you use, kind of like how, and this is going to pain me to say, but for some reason my mind went to this, how the Philly special play was just something that they drew up in training camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I'm coming to it, where it's just like, hey, something you're doing for fun now can come back to bite you later. Even how this week Danny Amendola retired, and I bring up this game because two reasons. One, I love this game. Two, I probably, my heart stopped multiple times, but there was the infamous Edelman to Amendola pass to the 2015 divisional game pass against Baltimore.
Yeah.
Those are little things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, even to your point,
Cam Newton like, touchdown against the Jets in 2020.
Loved that. Oh my goodness. I was screaming because I was, I still am a Cam Newton fan, even though it didn't really work out for him here. That game was just the tits. I was like, this is amazing. But I think what's really interesting is I remember I went to camp in 2019, Jacoby Myers' rookie year. And I remember I was watching and they practiced a few of those trick plays they had, the end around, the James White pass, and like the one they ran against Green Bay and all that. And I remember I'm like, oh my gosh, I saw them this play. You know what I mean? But it was one of those plays that like, it was at the end of practice, everyone was kind of goofing off and that was just the play that was run. And then to see it, you know, 4 months later in a game and you're like, yeah, these things kind of matter. Like what they're repping does come into play, even if it doesn't feel like a huge deal. But the whole, the keeping track of the stats of it all is where I'm like, well, that's silly. What's actually happening should matter, but you know, I think we all get caught up in the numbers of it all.
Yeah, but that's the thing I was going to say too. I'm going to say two things. One, the Week 17 game against the Jets in 2020, I love it and I hate it because I hate it for the fact of like, I'm like, where was this fun all year? Because that was like the first time ever I had seen them. They were just out there having fun, like the Asiasi touchdown. My
gosh, yes, I love. I was screaming for that because like I mentioned a little bit ago, I still like Devin Asiasi. I still believe in Devin Asiasi. So when he caught that, I was like, this is it. This is the breakout. He is going to be the GOAT. Just watch. And obviously that didn't come to fruition, but that game had everything. I remember, I think I tweeted out, I was like, all this game is missing is a N'Keal Harry downfield throw and I'll be all right. Like,
oh yeah, the game, it's like one of those games where I feel like nothing was on the line. I didn't care what happened. So I just enjoyed it. I knew like, this is the last time I'm going to see Patriots football for 8 months. So I'm just going to, 8, 9 months.
Really stress me. I was like, yeah, I'll take it.
There's something about when the Patriots either have their bye week or they don't play on Sunday when I can just flip on Red Zone all day long and just watch football. And
yeah,
the only money I care about is the only thing I care about is the money I lose gambling and my fantasy teams, plural. But that's the big thing with training camp where it's just like, don't overreact. Because what you see now, teams, when we play, say, the Colts, we play in November, they're not going to go back and study training camp footage. No, they're going to study who we're playing the week before. That's what they're going to look at.
The only
potential for training camp is that week one matchup with Miami, which we'll still see how that goes. I'm still anticipating there being like a clutch third down where Tua underthrows Tyreek Hill and Tyreek Hill throws a bitch fit. That's the one thing I'm looking forward to for that game where it's like 27-24 and he underthrows him on like third and 15 where if he gets the ball, it's a home run touchdown, but he misses him. And it's just
That would be pretty fun.
That'd be fun. The next thing I want to move on to quickly is just like I want to give you my players to watch, and I want to see what you think about them.
Okay.
And you and I are in a similar boat where there's two players on the defense I'm looking forward to this year. One's Ronnie Perkins, one's Cam McGrone. Because look.
Ooh, okay. Both are good. Yeah, both are good picks.
Yeah, both are good picks. Perkins just because we saw little flashes last year, but I feel like he can help fill the Van Noy loss, and then McGrone, I feel like can kind of. I'm not saying he's going to be Dante Hightower because that Mike linebacker is going to be really hard to replace. But at the same time, too, I feel like McGrone, there's a lot of that potential where it's another Michigan guy. Also, do the Chase Winovich production because I feel like Chase Winovich is one of those, like, he needed to change the scenery. And that's another thing, too. Here's another linebacker I'm interested in. It's like the linebackers. Mack Wilson, like player that's forgotten about. There's, like, all these players. Like we were saying earlier, like, we have Trey Nixon, Tyquan Thornton. But even with the running backs, there's the one Pierre Strong as well. There's just so many players.
Yeah, excited about Pierre Strong.
But my question for you is, with the offensive line, do we think that I'm not saying we have to watch many of these players, but do we think that these year big years for like Trent Brown or Isaiah Wynn, or do you think these are guys that are going to be here long term, or are these kind of those probably swan song years with the Patriots?
I think Trent Brown's obviously going to be he's obviously going to be here. He signed the 2-year extension.
Right.
I think he'll be fine. Wynn, I'm really interested on because I think he is a player that when you watch him play when he's healthy, you see why he was a first round pick. Like wow, this guy's a really good player. He's not around a ton, and he also has a ton of penalties, so that hurts. But I think he is a good player, like through and through. I think though his time's probably up after this year, only because. I know Patriots fans don't really love him, and I'm certain that the rest of the league does. So I'm like, I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, he's just going to get priced out of New England, and that's just going to be what it is. I think really if we're looking at O-line, though, Nani Kajus or Justin Herron, one of them has to show something, because at this point, you know, the Patriots thought ahead and drafted some young tackles, and for whatever reason, they just haven't panned out. Justin Herron looks better than Yanni Kajus, but I mean, that's not really saying much, because both look really overmatched. They drafted Andrew Stuber out of Michigan, and you know, Chasen Hines, an inside guy, and William Sherman, who can play tackle, but he's also an inside guy. Another 21 draft pick, yeah. So it's really interesting, because like someone has to step up because the Patriots need a swing tackle, right? They need someone who can fill in either side in case of injury, because Isaiah Wynn isn't the most durable, and low-key, neither is Trent Brown, especially because he missed all that time last year. You know, he had one healthy year in 2018. You know, he had one healthy year, and he was dominant, but he's not someone who you're like, all right, he's, you know, let's pencil him for 16, 17 games. He's going to miss some time. So at that point, who would be the tackle who's going to step up and play? Is it Herron? Is it Kajus? Is it one of the rookies? Don't know. Right now, it doesn't really feel like any of them, because none of them have done anything. Especially when you look at someone like Justin Herron, who, I mean, if we're being real, he has put together some of the absolute worst tape of any, you know, of any Patriot on the current roster. So I think we just need to see if he can, you know, clean it up in year three. I'm not optimistic about it, but I'd like to see that.
Another question, just because obviously there's all the talk about him with the first round pick and stuff like that. So we'll see what goes down there. But I'm going to root for the guy. I'm not going to not root for a guy just because people say, oh, the pick was wrong at the wrong time. But hey, if you believe that he's the best guy there and he's not going to get picked for when you're going to pick next, roll the dice and go for it.
Absolutely.
There's a segment I want to get into later, but this is a bit of a spicy. I don't know if it's spicy. Let's call it lukewarm. I think this is a year where Johnny really breaks out. I know that he's had good years in Tennessee, and last year was kind of a down year. But I think that the fact that the Patriots aren't producing a fullback this year, I think that there's going to be a lot more two tight end sets. I'm not saying it's going to be the Gronk Hernandez connection, because I don't think that will ever be replicated in New England again. That the Boston Tea Party was something very special. I'm thinking more of like what Martellus Bennett was in New England for.
He was so very, very good. He was like actually absurd. Like when you go back and watch anything from that 2016 season, it was like, holy cow. Like Martellus Bennett was very, very good. And what he did, it wasn't the same.
It was called the game winning pass.
Yeah, in the Super Bowl. Exactly right. He reminded me of Scott Chandler, but actually good. Because him and Gronk were similar players, and it was just like, cool. Now you just have to – whereas Gronk and Hernandez were not similar players. So it was like, all right, pick your poison, how to defend them. If that's a spicy take with Jonnu Smith, and I'm right there with you, like pepper me up, because I think we saw a lot of what they wanted to do with him with Jonnu last year. And if you remember, he had like five big plays, like touchdowns, you know, or big catches called back by penalties. It's like, it's not like the talent wasn't there, right? They were kind of using him like Cordarrelle Patterson in a way, where it was just like, you know, swing screens, bubbles, you know, jet sweeps, you know, out of the backfield, and you're like, okay, cool. He's not, he just doesn't have the role. He does need to play more. Although I did have, you know, I did one of the guys I follow on here, Taylor Kyles, really, really good analyst, next gen stats. He had mentioned like, well, yeah, that's all true. But at the same time, if he was a better player, like if he was playing better, they would have put him on the field more, which I do agree with. But I think going into this year with no back, with a change in the offense, I do agree that we're going to see a lot more Jonnu. I think really what we do need to see a little more of is more tight ends flexed out at wide receiver, right? Or at a wide receiver position. I think it's great having two tight ends, and you know, you line them up, you know, next to each other, you line them up on, you know, bookending both ends of the line. But let's get saucy with it. Put one in the slot, put one at wide receiver, and you know, line up someone like Devontae Parker, you know, in a nasty split next to the line, make it look like, you know, make it look different, right? Because it's one thing to just line up, you know, we got 85 right here, 81 right next to him, we're just gonna run the ball, or we're gonna throw play action out of it, and they're going to run some crosses. It's going to get real funky. But like, even better than that, make the defense declare, number one, or two, make them play this match, right? You don't want your linebacker out wide, you know, outside the numbers, trying to run with Jonnu Smith. Make them do that, right? Don't just give us like, oh yeah, here are our two tight ends. We're just going to put them on the end of the line, and we're going to make it happen. It's like, no, let's get creative with it. I think we do that, especially with Jonnu's movement skills, because I mean, that guy can run. Put him out there. You know, throw a smoke screen to him. Let him run with it. Like, do a little more than just like, hey, we're going to line him up or we're going to put him in it, you know, at H-back and we're going to try to make it happen. It's like, get creative. Let's see what happens. I think Jonnu Smith is in for a big year.
Yeah, that was a take that I said back in it was May. It was actually about the middle of May. I kind of was saying that. I got pushback on it. But you know what? It's my team. But at the same time, too, I just think that, look, you're going to see a lot of good I think not even lining up wide receivers. Just do two, you know, the two tight end sets. And by the way, just for clarification, people, and also for you, McGarvin, when I say, Mark, I'm not comparing what Smith is – what I think Smith can do this year to what Martellus Bennett did. No, that's just
– right.
You don't do that. And also, do I learn – like when people say Patrick Mahomes is the next Tom Brady, I'm just like – I always think back to – you probably remember this. Coach Carter.
Yeah.
Remember there was that one where – I forget his name, but he's like, how do you feel to be the next LeBron James? He's like, I'm not the next LeBron. I'm this – what's his name? Ty Crane. That was the guy. That was his character's name. But it's like, I'm this. That's why I like where it's just hey – he's going to be Jonathan Smith. He's not going to be Martellus Bennett. Like, we're not – no one – like, when Hunter Henry signed here, no one said, oh, it's the next Gronk. Because, look, Gronk, best tight end of all time, even though there are 10-year-olds out there who think that Travis Kelce is a better all-time tight end, which
– no, all-time, no. I think for 10-year-olds, like, for when they started watching football, it may very well be that he was the best tight end in the league. I think – especially in New England, I think with Travis Kelce, and I know this is a bit of an aside, but I have to get it out. I think because he wore 87, he plays in Kansas City, he plays with Mahomes, and he's kind of a douchebag, there's this perception of Travis Kelce as like not really that good. It's like, no, he's all of those things and very, very good at football. So, like, let's not pretend with that with him. I don't think he was ever the best type. I don't think he was ever better than Gronk up until, you know, Gronk retired and then came back, where in the last few years he's been better than Gronk. Sure, absolutely. But not all time. I wouldn't say all time.
Yeah. And if you're asking this podcaster, no, Gronk is not coming back in 22. I think he's done.
Yeah. Yeah. Because last time it was almost like he retired from the Patriots. Like,
yeah.
Specifically the Patriots, where this time it feels like he retired from football. So it's like, well, that'll do.
Yeah. No, that's exactly how I feel too. And then with, I didn't make a banner for this, but we'll talk about it quickly. With Brady now, and I love how everyone's out here saying Julio Jones, what's Brady and Jones going to look like? People out there saying that, what was it, Fred Taylor on ESPN saying that Julio Jones is going to have a 1,000-yard season. No, Julio Jones is going to have like 3 touchdowns, and then by like week 6, he's going to be an afterthought. It's literally, I replied to you in a tweet about this. I'm going to say two things. One about the tweet, which is he's filler until Chris Godwin comes back.
Yep, I would agree.
He is filler until Chris Godwin's 100% healthy. The other one is, who would have thought that Julio Jones at one point playing with Tom Brady would be possible, which I clammed for years in New England.
Should have been.
Like, imagine if Julio was here, like, 2017, 2018,
2019. Yep. 29, if he's here in 2019, the Patriots, I mean, Tom Brady's probably still on the Patriots, let's be real. But
But now it's just weird to think that he's just, like, an afterthought and that he's kind of like, oh, hey, yeah, he just signed a 1-year deal, like – And also, too, I've seen this from a Falcons perspective, but I want to ask you, just because, look, we're both outsiders in that whole subject. Do you think this takes a hit to his Falcons legacy or no?
No, only because the, you know, I know he requested the trade, but the Falcons traded him. Also, they're not doing anything. I think whenever you have these, like, franchises with, like, you know, great generational kind of players, whenever they leave, everyone's always like, oh, come on, this is going to hurt their legacy. And I'm like, yeah, but at the same time, the organization failed them, right? When Megatron retired early, when he retired at 31, everyone's like, oh, I can't believe he retired so soon. He could have been – I'm like, yeah, but the franchise failed him too, right? Like, they didn't give him anything. Yeah, Barry Sanders as well. It's like they gave him nothing to work with. Of course he left Andrew Luck with Indianapolis. A little different situation, but it's the same kind of thing where I seen the tweet going around today where, you know, they're like, oh, I can't believe, you know, he left the Colts high and dry. It's like, well, no, they left him high and dry. He was getting crushed weekly. At some point, I mean, his only weapon for a while there was T.Y. Hilton. It's like, come on, if it's T.Y. Hilton and Dwayne Allen are my only weapons and you're not giving me an offensive line, then of course I'm going to leave early. But does that hurt his legacy? Maybe, but at the same time, I think it hurts the franchise's legacy more than anything. It's like we had a generational great player. And we did absolutely nothing with him. Falcons is the same thing. It's like we had, you know, Julio Jones and did absolutely nothing. We went to one Super Bowl. We lost that one Super Bowl, and we did absolutely nothing else with him. So it's like, sure, you can be mad at Julio for signing with a division rival. But at the same time, why did you as a franchise let it get to a point where he was better off signing with a division rival? I don't know. Like,
They should have won the Super Bowl, but it's not my problem. They lost that Super Bowl themselves.
That's on them.
But I agree with you even that, like, Andrew Luck was getting crushed. And also, too, shout out Patriots legend Dwayne Allen. hey, he's a Patriot at one point.
Yes, he was.
But you're just right, though. Like, no one looks at it from the organizational standpoint. It's always
the player. Because he's always the player. Yeah.
Atlanta clearly is a crash and burn situation right now. Like, we all know that they're going to be the worst team in football this year.
Marcus Mariota and rookie Drake London. I mean, come on. Like, if that's what you're bringing to the table, I'm sorry. Like, that's just not going to be enough.
Exactly. It's nice when you see certain teams there, right? But, like, Atlanta, like, you and I said this earlier, where it's like right now there's that sense of hope, but like even now, like I can already go down the list of teams in the NFL and go, okay, they're probably not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're definitely not going to make the playoffs. And Atlanta's in that category. I know it's July 27th, but you already have to think about that, where it's just like they're not going to make it.
Atlanta is firmly in contention for the number one overall pick. I think it'll be an upset if they end up with number two. Like, I mean, they're not a good team. Yeah. So you can't be mad at players for not wanting to be on bad teams. Even Matt Ryan, to an extent, where, you know, people had mentioned it with him when he got traded to the Colts. They're like, oh, this is going to, you know, tarnish his Falcons legacy. And I'm like, it most certainly will not. He is the franchise leader in literally everything. He's the best quarterback they've had ever. So they'll be fine. They'll get over it. And also, the franchise didn't give him anything. I mean, come on. He had a game last year where he's throwing, you know, Olamide, you know, Zacchaeus, and Russell Gage. And those were his top options, on top of, obviously, Kyle Pitts. Why am I blanking? Kyle Pitts, yes. On top of obviously Kyle Pitts, but like if that's all you're giving me to work and I don't have any lines, Jake Matthews, for whatever reason, is still out there starting. I mean, at some point, we do have to just look at the organization like, well, did you ever think about what you did wrong? Like, maybe it was you.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was all those years of Thomas Dimitroff and stuff like that. And then the founder of Home Depot, Arthur Blank, that's where all his money's going.
Is it? I literally didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how he got rich. He looks like the – I just call him the Crypt Keeper because he looks like a Crypt Keeper. We ready to talk McCorkle?
Oh, we're always ready to talk McCorkle, of course.
So like we were saying earlier how, look, Bill Belichick hyping him up, off-season workouts, he's lost weight, he knew he had to lose weight, he's gotten better. My only thing with Mac is – I don't understand how people look at him and go, he's going to regress from what he was last year.
Yeah.
I think last year. Yeah. Can I say one more quick thing?
Yeah, go for it.
I just think last year, if anything, I look at last year more as he overachieved than he underachieved. Because look, 2020, Patriots fans didn't know what to expect. 2021, we know it's a rookie quarterback, so we see what happens. But playoff game aside, which there's a take I have for that down the road. 10-7 and 22-13 is not a bad rookie year.
I completely agree. I think with Mac, I don't actually think that people in their hearts believe that he's going to rest. I think it's the exact opposite, though. Something I've thought for a very long time is what's known doesn't have to be said, right? If we know, you know, a player isn't very good, no one has to keep saying the player is very good. Like, no one's ever saying, like, Marcus Mariota reached the ceiling, because we all kind of know that, right? No one's saying Jimmy Garoppolo has hit a ceiling, because, again, we kind of already know that. I think people keep repeating it with Mac because the concern is that he hasn't, right? Like, low-key, you're kind of just like, you probably could get a little better. Oh, no, right? Because people are married to their takes. That's something I've been saying for the last few years, where people just get married takes and they just stick with it. So the idea is, Mac was supposed to be the bad quarterback, right? The bad of the big five that came out last year. He was supposed to be the bad one. He came out and he was literally the only good one. And so in order for their take to work that he's the bad one, everyone else has to get better and he has to regress, right? That's the only way their take of him being the bad one sticks. So if everyone's going in, like, oh yeah, McCorkle's not going to be a good player, just watch, he's going to be exposed a lot and he goes out and plays well. The take now has to change to, well, you know, he may have been good, but, you know, that's it. That's his ceiling. That's as good as we get. Everyone else is going to get better. And it's like, I wouldn't put any money on that whatsoever, right? I wouldn't put money on that. Of the five quarterbacks who went first last year, the only one who was going to regress is the one who didn't overwhelm. That doesn't even make any sense. I think it's a lot of people who just had the opinion on Mac since Alabama, and they want to stick with it because, you know, that's kind of what people do. They just kind of stick with what they know or stick with what they originally said, and they want to be right on it. But it's not looking too good for those people.
No, I will be honest with you. The week of the draft last year, I said that his ceiling was Kirk Cousins' prime in Washington, which I think could still be a fair comparison because Kirk Cousins in Washington was fine. Kind of like I'm not going to be crazy out here. Like what I've talked to you about, how people are out here thinking Derek Carr can win MVP this year, and how Derek Carr all of a sudden is going to turn the clock around and be great. But Max, I think Mac can very well be in that, you know, middle of the pack quarterback class, like that, like, you know, mid-teens ranking kind of area in the NFL, like, you know, like let's say 14 to 17th best in the league, somewhere in there. I think he has the potential to be there. I'm not ready to crown him top 10 yet. But the other thing, too, is with the Patriots this year.
Yeah.
No Patriots fan is going to go out there with all the craziness in the AFC and saying, even though the two Super Bowls to be played at now State Farm Stadium, the Patriots are representatives from the AFC, including the Malcolm Butler interception.
Yep.
No Patriots fans out here saying this year, look, we're going to the Super Bowl, we're going to be in Phoenix, yada, yada, yada. No, we're going to be in Phoenix in December against Arizona, sure. But that's the thing, too. Patriots fans don't have the expectations. Come talk to me next year and the year after. You know what? That's when I think you're expecting to see that gear. But for now, you just want to see the players succeed and you want to see the team succeed.
Yeah, I think where you have him right now, where you were like, oh, he could probably be in the 14 to 17 range, I would kind of argue that he might already be there, right? Because I'm trying to think of like the other players, right? If we take out the rookies, you're looking at, you know, the four other guys he was drafted with, he's better than all of them. And you look at some of the journeymen around the league and you're like, he's not 17. He's damn close, right? Because you're thinking of, and the, you know, not journeymen, even the non-journeyman quarterbacks or the quarterbacks who just haven't shown enough yet, right? You're thinking of someone like Cousins, Tannehill. I think Tannehill is probably a little higher. But you think of someone like, why am I blanking on his name?
Aforementioned Derek Carr.
No, I think Derek Carr is a little higher too. I think Derek Carr is probably in that probably in the top 12, somewhere thereabout. But Jalen Hurts is who I was thinking of, right? You think of someone like Jalen Hurts, who I think is going to be good, but again, we haven't seen enough yet, right? I think if we're being real, Mac has shown more as a player than Jalen Hurts to this point, and that's through no fault of his own, but that's just kind of is what it is. You think about the quarterback situation down in Carolina, right? You have Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. Both of those guys are put under Mac Jones. So, like, when you add up all of the players, right, all these players you're thinking of, you're like, might he already be in that 17, 18 range? Like, he might actually be there already. I think his ceiling, like, I think he can be, you know, in that Derek Carr range, that, you know, 11, 12, some years he'll sneak into the top 10, other years he'll, you know, fall right up to 12. And it's just like, kind of is what it, you know, kind of is where he's at. I think though with Mac Jones, again, it's just a matter of if the potential wasn't obvious, I don't think people would be talking about him as much as they are. And by people, I mean other fan bases, especially the Bills Mafia. They spend a lot of time talking about Mac and how Mac's not good. He's definitely not good. And I'm like, you're spending a lot of time on a player you don't think is very good. Why is that, right? Because they're not, you know, they're not saying anything about Tua for whatever reason, and I don't think Tua has shown anything.
They own Tua, that's
point.
Why.
that probably is why. Zach Wilson, same kind of thing, but no one's mentioned that because, again, what's known doesn't have to be said, right? Like, you kind of know Zach Wilson isn't it right now, so you don't have to talk about him. With Mac Jones, it's more just like, he makes me kind of nervous, so I'm going to say, hey, he's probably not that good. Sure, but the truth is the truth. I think this year, you know, full off season as the starter, entrenched as the starter, I think he has better players around him this year. I think, you know, his numbers will look much better. I think he's going to be a good player.
I do too. Zach Wilson, by the way, only good with moms. And only moms for friends and moms.
And he picks the hot one too. That was really interesting because you were looking at the picture and you're like, is it her? And everyone's like, oh yeah, it's the one in the white on the end. And I'm like, she's hot. Good for him. God has taste.
Good for him. Zach Wilson, popular with MILFs. But I think out of all the my only take with Zach is, I just want to talk about him for a second, is I think the Jets have given him to where it's now, it's up to him. You know, they gave him Garrett Wilson, Corey Davis, Breece Hall, I'm on the Jets, I'm very excited to see Michael Carter, Uzama, Braxton Berrios, Patriots legend. And that's with Zach. So I think it's all on Zach. Zach's going to be the biggest wild card. That's the biggest what-if team in the NFL this year, where I think it's either it can either crash or it can skyrocket.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I had Zach Wilson as the player with the most bust potential as far as the quarterbacks went. I thought he was either going to be very good or very bad, and there was going to be no middle ground. So I guess we'll see. They gave him enough weapons around, like you mentioned. They, you know, patched up the offensive line a little bit. They gave him a defense. So it's like, cool, at this point, shoot or get off the pot.
Yep, and then with that's the thing with the offensive line, too. I remember still watching that Week 2 game, and I'm like, okay, if they don't protect him, he's going to get hurt. And then what happened in the second Patriots game?
He got hurt.
Yep.
He got hurt.
Yeah. And the only thing I want to say about Buffalo quickly is, and it's because I saw this on Twitter today, I saw fans post the drive summaries from the wild card game and saying, oh, if I can go relive this night. I literally wanted to tweet, if I want to do that, I'll do it. Watch Super Bowl 51. You can have your wild card game, but you guys decided to play. We are the champions after the wild card game, which that's why I know they all like to say the flip of the coin. And believe me, I am on the boat. I don't know where you stand, but I'm on the boat in the opinion of play to win the ball back in overtime in the NFL. I think that.
I know it's unpopular, but that's where I'm at too. It's like, yeah, buddy, like if you want to win, you got to play defense. And I know some people are like, well, only one team has to get to play defense. Well, you had 60 minutes. You didn't get it done. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All you had to do was not give up an 80-yard touchdown drive. And then you did. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I also have a hot take about the Bills this year. And I still believe this is that if they do not win this year, I don't know when, because Josh Allen's contract kicks in. Yeah. And I think Jordan Poyter's gone after the season.
Yeah. I love Jordan Poyter. I love both their safeties. Oh, I do too. Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde.
I think it's going to be like Wynn. You know where he's priced out. I think he's going to be priced out of Buffalo.
Yes. Yep. I agree. I think what really irks me about Buffalo Bills fans is they make it so hard, because I really do like a lot of players on their teams. They just don't shut the hell up, though. So I'm like, can y'all just shut the hell up for 4 minutes? I can enjoy your team. Like, they're like, you're like, oh, I kind of like Josh Allen. They're like, yes, Josh Allen's the greatest. I'm like, shut up. I'm appreciating him. Let me appreciate him quietly. But they're just like, oh my God, look how great we are. And I'm like, oh, have good players. I know. I like your team, but just shut up for a minute. Like, please. But they just are the most vocal group, especially with relation to Patriots fans. They're just so vocal, and they just want to like always let you know. I'm like, please, for the love of God, I don't care. Yes, you won by 30 in the playoffs. Great. I don't care. I don't care. Yeah, you have a great team, and y'all lost in, you know, the final 13 seconds of a game. That sucked, but get over it.
Yeah, and also, too, that's the other thing, too, because they have other players on their team. Like, I like Dawson Knox. I actually like Josh Allen as a player.
Yeah.
He's fun to watch, but...
And I actually kind of like him as a person. He seems like a cool dude, and I'm like, that sucks. It sucks that he looks like a dude, and I'm like, oh, no.
Is it bad that I saw a TikTok today from their training camp, and it was like... them walking up to all the players and stuff during the thing, and it's like, what do you do for a living? And they say something that's like completely off related to football. Like, Josh Allen, he's just like, I'm a guitar tech for a Leonard Skinner tribute band. I'm just like, there's little things like that where I'm like, I want to like you guys.
Yep.
You guys, it's, I have the same opinion with the Yankees. I know Red Sox, Yankees is a little different.
Yep.
Blue Jays, Yankees. Yeah. Like, I like Aaron Judge. I like these players, but with Yankees fans, they make it so fucking hard to like the team.
Yep.
Like, with Bills fans, it's not only my experience with Buffalo, but it's the, you think that Josh, well, for them, Josh Allen is Jesus Christ. I was in Buffalo on Monday for Rage Against the Machine, and I saw countless jerseys. I heard a shout chant. I'm sitting there in the arena waiting for the concert to begin, and I hear the shout chant, and I'm saying to myself, please, God, kill me now. I'm in
Yeah, it's I don't know, but I'm still going to kind of do what I do with the Bills, and where I'm just kind of like admire their team from afar, because I do think they have a lot of players that I like, and as a result, I kind of root for the Bills, except when, you know, when they play the Patriots, or like last year, there was a point where I ended up rooting for the Jaguars because they were beating the Bills, and at the time the Patriots were in, it was, you know, they were neck and neck with the Patriots, and I was like, well, at that point, like, I can root for you. But if it's something like the playoff game, I remember for, you know, the divisional round when they played the Chiefs, I was rooting for the Bills quietly because their fans wouldn't shut the hell up about it. But I was rooting for them, and I was just like, oh, y'all fell apart. That sucks. And if they weren't jackasses about it, I'd probably feel a little more bad that the game ended the way it did, especially when, you know, Gabe Davis went off and then had nothing to show for it.
That won me money. Thank you very much, Gabe Davis. Anytime touchdown, cashed easily. I have a good would you rather. Sure. Who would you rather see happy, Bills Mafia or Brittany Mahomes?
Ooh, she's an annoying woman. Probably her, though, Brittany Mahomes, because, like, she is annoying and she is obnoxious, but, like, at least she's just one person. When Bills Mafia is, like, a million people who don't shut the hell up, so I'm like, all right, pick my poison. Honestly, I'd rather, you know, off myself, but not an option, so I'm going to go with Brittany.
Yeah. I have to say the same too. First, like it's a tough comp, but even still, it's just like, oh man. One thing I think about that team is, what if they had Kyle Williams, like prime Kyle Williams, on their D line?
Yeah,
right now?
He's someone who deserved it. I hate that they only got him to one playoff game. That's ridiculous. He is that would be great. But I think Ed Oliver has low key, like, he's arrived. He's a good player. He is a good player. After, you know, 2-3 years of not being anyone worth talking about, I think last year he had a really good year, and it kind of flies under the radar because everyone else on the team had a really good year, but he's a good player.
Yeah, but even in our game, in the playoff game, I can't believe we're talking about the Bills. I just want to say this quickly, though. Because we're having their little love fest. Buffalo, look, we're doing it, too, on a Patriots-centered podcast with two
You're
Patriots
welcome.
Fans. The Micah Hyde interception, I was like, I can't be mad at that. I'm like,
no, it was a great play. It was a great play from a great player. And just like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, it happens.
But talk like ours is what separates the fans from just the overall people who appreciate the game like we do.
Yeah.
Where we can look at a play from a rival team in a playoff game and not be like, oh, that was lucky. That was that. You can look at that with a straight face and just be like,
that was awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
That was awesome.
I kind of know about the playoff game as a whole. It was just like, yeah, no, they beat the shit out of us, and it happened. So you just kind of sit back and drink a little and appreciate. You're like, all right, y'all won by 30. You sure did. Oh, y'all were the better team. Yeah, beat the shit out of us. Yeah, I saw. Like,
you have one's expectations that were higher that had a disappointing season. Patriots had a disappointing end, but last season was not a disappointing season.
Correct. Good point.
Before I get into our last segment, I want to ask you something right now. This year, I know it's July. What is a successful season for the Patriots, in your opinion? Where you can look back on, so say for like 6 months from now, we're looking back at this and like, yeah, you know what? That season, it was a good season.
Interesting. Double-digit wins is obviously going to be it because they already cleared 10 last year. I think, looking at the schedule, I think they have the potential to win 12. I want double-digit wins, but I'll take it a step further there than a basic answer like that. I think more wins where it doesn't feel so close, right? Because last year they won 10 games, but in some of those games, you were kind of clenching there at the end, right? They played, when they beat the Texans, you were kind of like, didn't feel great for a lot of it. Yeah, you know, you're like, didn't feel great for a lot of it. Same kind of thing when they beat, not when they beat the Cleveland, but for most of the Tennessee game, it was kind of like that, where you're like, oh, I don't know, man, it doesn't feel great. And I know that's a weird way to put it, because like, how do you measure how something feels? But that's the best way I can put it, where it was like, there were games.
Even parts of the first Jets game was like that.
Yeah, and you're like, this doesn't feel great, right? Like, this doesn't feel like an ass-whooping that it should be. Even if the score ends up being an ass-whooping, like with the Titans game, where it ended up being a really blowout, I was like, yeah, but like, it didn't feel that way. I want more wins that feel like that, and more losses that feel like they felt last year, because a lot of the losses the Patriots lost, I know everyone hates moral victories, but there are a lot of games where you...
Tampa and Dallas.
Like, Tampa and Dallas in particular, where you're just like... one other thing, or even Indianapolis. I think if they didn't start so slow, it's like, we were right. It just one little thing you would have had it cleaned up.
So week one against Miami
with a fumble, right? So it's like, cool. This year is a successful year if we had double digit wins, and it doesn't feel like the Patriots were just kind of hanging on to some of their wins.
But can I give you one hang on win that I wouldn't mind seeing? What I'm not totally mad about. The Chargers game.
Oh, that was not a hang on win though. I felt like they beat the
3-point game,
Chargers.
But there was the Phillips. Adrian Phillips pick six was the deal breaker.
The game only felt as close as it did because they, you know, the Chargers scored on the last drive against Jalen Mills at the very end there. Outside of that, I believe it was a 10-point win or something to that effect, and it was just like, at no point was I worried about that game. The entire game, I'm like, yeah, the Patriots are the better team here. So, like, they're going to win because they're the better team. Also, I just, for whatever reason, don't trust the Chargers. I don't trust them to finish, so.
I like them this year. I want to believe in them. I like Herbert. But I still think there's a chance of Kansas City still that team to beat.
Yep, I would agree wholeheartedly.
I also think with them too, with less weapons, I think this is a chance for Mahomes to really prove himself.
Yeah, and I think they'll be fine. He is the weapon. So like,
yeah.
Everyone's like, well, who is he throwing to? It doesn't matter. He's going to find someone. So,
you know, everyone right now is like, oh, LA did all these upgrades. Russ in Denver. Derek Carr with Devontae Adams and all these other weapons in Vegas. And then Patrick Mahomes just comes in and it's just like, oh, yeah, that's right. 15 still plays in Kansas City.
Yep. He's still him. So,
yep. Before we go, are you ready? And I know it's July, but are you ready to think for a second?
Sure. Always ready to think. I'm going to think wrong, but I'm ready to think. Hot take for 2022. I do. I see it. Patriots hot take for 2022.
What's brewing?
Hot take. I think they have a top 10 offense, and not just in scoring. I think it feels like, oh shit, this is a top 10 offense. I think with the running game they have, with the receiving upgrades they've gotten, and really it's Devontae Parker and Tyquan Thornton, but I think that's enough. And I think with the emergence of Kendrick Bourne, I think they have the opportunity to put up some more points. I think Mac is in for a good year. I think they have, I can see a top 10 offense, and you said a hot take, so I needed to give a hot one. I think the offense is going to be significantly better than the defense.
There was one I was going to have, but it didn't make a lot of sense. It was just one of those ones where it's kind of like outlandish, and I feel like a lot of people have already done it, which is Dark Horse MVP candidate Mac Jones.
Okay, I consider that as well, because I can see that as well. I can see that as well.
My one, Damian Harris is a 1,000-yard rusher.
Is that a hot take?
I don't know.
Feel like a hot take. That feels like something that should already happen. I feel like that should have already happened. It should have happened last year, but he got hurt.
Ooh, there's a bet that, or Kendrick Bourne's a 1,000-yard receiver.
Ooh, I like that one. I like that. I do like that one. I do like that one. I think another one I kind of have. I think Tyquan Thornton's going to play a lot more than we all expect. I think they're going to manufacture some touches. He's going to have like 600 all-purpose yards.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying offensive rookie of the year or anything like that. I will say this, though. I think there's a chance both of those come out of the Jets, though. I still think there's a chance both of those guys come from New York. Breece Hall and Sauce.
Breece Hall and Sauce Gardner. Okay. That's fair.
I still think there's a chance. Because the only other guy I can see is Hutch, really, for offensive rookie of the year. Unless Kayvon Thibodeau has as much energy as that Giants fan kid, I think his name is Sam, had on stage during the draft. He comes out and plays without his zazz. Yeah.
I like Kayvon. For offensive defensive rookie of the year, I like for defense, I think Derek Stingley is going to be it, because I think Houston is a bad team. I think they're going to get thrown out a lot, and he's going to be the one who's going to lock down whoever. Yeah, I think he's going to have the stats for defensive rookie of the year, because the team is going to be down a lot. They're going to get thrown down a lot. It's going to be like, all right, cool. He's going to have the opportunities to pick up a lot of plays. I think for offensive rookie of the year, I like Jamison Williams. As weird as that is, I know it's Detroit. I know it's Jared Goff. I know all that. I think, though, when you have a special player, and I think Jamison Williams is a special player, when you have a special player, he overdoes the circumstances. And I think when you have a special player on a bad team, they get extra love for these awards, because they get the caveat of, yeah, but he did it with Jared Goff. So that gives him 3 points versus someone who didn't. You know what I mean? So, like, that's how I'm leaning there.
The other one I have to say as well, potentially, is Chris Olave for the North.
Michael Thomas
is comeback player of the year, but...
See, but that would require Jameis. That would require Jameis having a big year, and I just don't see that happening. Just because, like, his knee...
Yeah.
His knee doesn't seem all the way back. Like, just reports that are coming out, everyone's kind of like, oh, he looks good for someone who was just injured. I'm like, I don't like that. Usually you get the, oh, he's way ahead of his timetable. He's crushing his rehab. And with him, it's kind of been like, he's rehabbing. And I'm like,
There's also two other offensive rookies I'm looking out for, and that is – both are receivers. One is Christian Watson in Green Bay, and then Sky Moore in Kansas City.
Ooh, that's – I like that. You know who else I like? I like Khalil Shakir from Buffalo, I believe. Played at Boise. I'm like, cool. I like him. I think he has an opportunity. I also think George Pickens, if we're just talking receivers, I think George Pickens is going to have a good year in Pittsburgh. So.
And then on the defensive side, I like George Karloftis to have a good year with Kansas City on there.
Ooh, you know, here's the thing. Here's my hot take there. I think Kansas City is incapable of playing good defense with the offense that they have for whatever reason. Like, they just can't put it together where they have two good units. And I think the offense is going to be pretty good. So I'm like, well, by my own logic, that means the defense is not. So I just don't see it. Even though they have some players, I like Nick Bolton. I don't like any of their secondary. Justin Reed's a cool player, but I don't like that. And then Chris Jones, he needs a running mate. So yeah, you have Karloftis, but like, I just don't see them having the number. I don't see him having the numbers. I don't see the defense having the numbers as a whole. And I don't see him individually having the numbers to, you know, get defensive rookie of the year.
But if you're also a betting man like I am, bet a lot of Kansas City overs, because I think this year they're going to be in a lot of shootout Big 12 style
football games. Oh, yeah, because that defense, I agree.
Remember the Patriots-Chiefs first Sunday nighter, Brady Mahomes, 43-40?
Oh, my goodness, yes. That was a hell of a game. That game shouldn't have been close either. That was the worst part. It was just like losing
29 and a half, twice.
Yep, and then it was just like, cool, I love this. I love this for us. When I remember the Jason McCourty, where he came off of Kareem Hunt, kind of had to because Mahomes was scrambling and, you know, Patrick hits him and he just takes the field and I'm like, this is great. Or where they had Tyreek Hill in the double and it was Daron Harmon who was supposed to be playing over him and it just took a bad angle and he just cut up the sideline. I was just like, cool, 75-yard touchdown for us. So we're having a great time here.
The same thing happened too in the AFC Championship game, 36-31. Yeah. We're 14, yep. People forget, 14-0 Patriots at the half.
Yeah, and then it ends up going overtime like it did, and it's just like, oh, man, he's gonna. But hey, you can't keep a great offense down for a whole whole game. So if you can get the get out, and I think that's part of what makes Buffalo so good, right? It's like they capitalize on opponent slow starts, right? It's just like, all right, cool, opponent's down to a start, cool, put up a huge lead, and then trying to make it happen. Didn't happen in Kansas City, but that's what happened in their first Kansas City game. I think it was like week 3 or week 4. It was just like, yeah, y'all started slow. We did not. We took huge advantage of it. You can't get a great team down all the time, but if you're going to play like that, you have to put up a ton of points. Patriots didn't do that in the AFC Championship game, but did enough to win the game. So I was like, all right, cool. It kind of balanced out. But, you really want to see if you have Mahomes up against the rope like that, you got to score more points because he's going to. That team is going to. How they get down.
Yeah, and also 2018 would have been cool because I still say this, even though what happened in New Orleans, but it would have been cool to see a Brady Breeze Super Bowl.
Yeah, that would have, oh my goodness, that would have
been a better game.
That should happen. 100%. The Rams had nobody there, and it showed. Yeah.
Congrats to new Good Morning Football host Jason McCourty for making one of the best plays in that game.
Yeah, I don't know how we just every time that play comes out, especially when he retired, happy shout out to Jason McCourty. He retired recently. And so that play was all over the timeline. And you're just looking. He ran from the far hash to the middle of the field. And you were just like, and he got in record time. And it was just like, knocked the ball out and went about his day. And I'm like, wow, what a play.
You just got to be impressed. Because look, I think we've talked about this before, and I talk about this so much. But the three Patriots Super Bowls, for as much as offensive did, besides the Malcolm Butler interception in 49, you also have the Dante Hightower tackling Lynch on the 1 yard line.
Yep.
Him and Jamie Collins. Super Bowl 51, which I still say this, Hightower strip sack. I don't know if the Patriots win if that play doesn't happen.
I don't think they do.
And the Jason McCourty play of Super Bowl 53.
Yep. Defense still plays. Defense travels. So
defense wins championships. We saw it in
100%.
We've seen it in the last two Super Bowls with the Bucs defense shutting down, which I still believe was Todd Bowles just a masterpiece. And then last year, Aaron Donald had a great game against the Bengals.
Which we all kind of saw coming because that line had no good. That was an O-line that shouldn't have been in the Super Bowl. But the rest of the team obviously deserved it. But that O-line had no business.
That's my other hot take with this season. I still think that team isn't as good. Not as good, but I still think that Cincinnati, if they get out to a slow start, they're going to be that team that everyone panics about and kind of freaks out. It's like, oh, what happened to Burrow? What happened to this? It's just like, I think with Baltimore being good again, it may be a tougher hill to climb for that.
I think you're absolutely right. I can see them winning 8-9 games, as weird as that is, just because I think their division is tough. And a lot of the wins they had last year, they kind of scraped by. So it's like, kind of like when I talked with the Patriots, where like the wins didn't feel great, like at the time, like as you're watching, like, this doesn't feel awesome. It was the kind of same thing with Bengals, even straight through the playoffs. It was like, we won, but like, cool, did not feel great. And then they lost Super Bowl, and you're like, yeah, because you probably shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Yeah. And then that's the other thing. The other take I have of the AFC North is, I know they don't have exactly a good quarterback right now. Don't count out the Pittsburgh Steelers from being a competitive team. Mike Tomlin football teams don't back down.
I was just going to say, I think Mike Tomlin's too good a coach to have a bad team. So
they'll be an 8-9-win football team.
That's, I was going to say, pencil them in for 9 wins. That's kind of where we're at.
They're going to be that team where, you know, their defense gets them out of a couple of games. Yep. That's the reason, too, why I think Jordan Poyer's gone, especially after what Micah Fitzpatrick just signed for, which caused the tragedy of the century where we don't even get to play at Heinz Field anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
We have to play. I don't even want to say the name. I don't even remember it, but it's like the ketchup bottles went down. Like,
yeah, I'm calling it Heinz Field. We're playing at Heinz Field week two.
Trubisky versus Jones. It's going to be great, everyone.
Oh, barn burner. Just watch.
It's going to be like, bet the under. Bet the under. But anyway, folks, that's going to wrap it up here. If you want to know more about McGarvin, follow him on Twitter, @PatriotsPOV. If you want to check out his other endeavors, twitter.com/niceentgroup.
Oh, appreciate McGarvin, the plug.
I'm Griff. Anytime. I always got to make my guests happy. But anyway, guys, see you next time. Yeah. It feels good to be back podcasting. That's all I got to say.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.